from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Will Jameson Taillon be a Cub past July 30th?
I would say most likely not. 2 years of contract control at a $17 million a year. A very good and reliable pitcher. But if the consensus and with Jed Hoyer in his front office is we're not winning this year, then you're going in with a 32-plus-year-old pitcher with 2 years left. Can that $17 million a year be spent in a better way?
Jameson Taillon very much on the trading block, according to our Bruce Levine. Man, life comes at you fast, Cub fans. If Jameson Taillon's on the trading block, that is a massive concession for this year, obviously. But is it a willing, willful concession for next year, too? I mean, Taillon is going to make $18 million next year and $18 million in 26. So that's a lot of money you're trying to get off the books. I don't know what kind of prospect capital you're going to get. That's a lot of money for a pitcher who is very good at staying healthy and going deep into games. And this year has an ERA of 3.10, which is very, very good by league standards. Was a 3.3 ERA in June over five starts. And Jameson Taillon has gone at least five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In 10 straight starts, he's gone at least five innings. Gone seven in a couple of those. He's gone at least six in six of those. Seven of those. Seven of his last 10 starts, he's gone at least six innings. That's legit. With an ERA in the mid threes, that is very legit in MLB these days. So can you play the beginning of that again, Sean? I want to hear the tone of Bruce's answer, which sounded kind of declarative, and Bruce knows stuff, folks. This is from inside the clubhouse yesterday, David Haw and Bruce Levine talking about Cubs' offerings at the deadline.
Will Jameson Taillon be a Cub past July 30th?
I would say most likely not.
That's enough right there. So most likely not. Woof. Okay, so Taillon takes 18 mil off the books for next year and the year after that, giving you some renewed flexibility. Still surprised that they'd want to sell him. I mean, you got to sell pieces that make money, pieces that have money attached, and you don't have a lot of those options. Would you guys sell on Ian Happ, who makes 21 mil next year and 19 mil the year after that? Probably you can't, though, because he's got a no trade clause, which he wanted badly. He loves it here. His wife is from here. So, I mean, you could try and talk to Ian Happ and convince him, but I don't think that's going to happen. Would you sell on Seiya Suzuki? Would you trade Seiya Suzuki? I'd need to know what that contract is in terms of a no trade. Looking at the contract itself on Cott's contract, I do not see a specific no trade. Oh, there it is. Full no trade clause for Seiya Suzuki. Full no trade clause. So there you go. A no trade clause for both Happ and Suzuki. So you are locked in at the corners. Man. You are locked in at the corners at relatively reasonable prices as long as they are producing. And they are producing. Seiya and Happ and Bush are the three hitters who are producing. So you can't deal either of those corners. Can't deal either of them. Full no trade clauses for Seiya Suzuki and Ian Happ. Dansby Swanson, nobody's going to give you anything for him in year two of a $177 million deal when he can't hit. Nico Horner, see, this is why guys like Nico and Tyone come up, because they have a little money on the books. Nico making 11.5 next year, 12 the year after that. God, I don't want them to trade Nico Horner. And that's not because we talk to him every week on Parkins and Spiegel. I think that dude is a ball player. And he's hitting again. He's hitting .380 during the 12-game hit streak. Didn't get hits last night, but hit the ball very hard last night. Drew a walk last night. So dependable at second. Can play short in a pinch at a very high level. You should not be trading Nico Horner. And if you are, it's an indication of much bigger and deeper problems. So maybe you have to deal Tyone, right? Maybe you have to find a way to get that money off if you're not going to just steamroll and keep throwing money after it and go through the second level of the CBT and up towards the third level of the CBT. Let's talk to you guys at 312-644-6767. Terry is in St. Charles. Terry's in St. Charles and is now on Hit and Run. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Matt. Hey, love your show, man. Appreciate you taking my call.
You got it.
I'm all for trading Tyone. I'm all for considering trading Morrell, because they brought it up yesterday on Fox. One of the few points they made yesterday on Fox is that Morrell isn't hitting the junk pitches. He's only hitting fastballs. When he has hit a junk pitch, it was just a bad pitch. Okay. And he's not hit like he was supposed to this year. I love the guy, but we need the bat. That's why he's playing third base, and his defense has improved, but it's not great. And they've got guys down in the minors who can come up. I love Nico, so I am with you. I don't want to trade him. Happ, I know they've got a no trade. I agree with you, but I don't agree in the fact that he's been hitting, because it's been inconsistent. For a good portion of the first part of the season, he wasn't hitting. And the same thing goes for Suzuki. We need, consistency. But what I really was wondering what you think of this is, I don't blame Council. Council can only put the players on the field that he's been given, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I blame Hoyer, and I wonder if Ricketts has said we don't go over the threshold unless we're contending. And Hoyer has made some poor decisions as far as players he signed and has given to Council to work with. So just my thoughts. I'd appreciate hearing what you think about that.
Thanks, Terry. The team building leaves a lot of questions. It really does. Because you've got some dudes in your core that you've locked up who are solid players, but they're not great players. They're just not. Should Ian Happ be making $21, $22 million for what he is as a left fielder? Should Seiya Suzuki be making the money that he is as a right fielder with an OPS around 8? Have they overrated Seiya Suzuki, who continues to be a problem out there in right field from time to time? They bring back Cody Bellinger for $25 million plus for next year and the year after that. I think they really thought that they could deal Bellinger this year if things were looking bad, but now Bellinger hurt, and I don't think they could deal him. I mean, you can trade guys on the injured list. I'd be interested to see if they just kind of do a salary dump with Bellinger here. If it gets that bad, just get anything that you can and let the Yankees bring up Bellinger in 3 weeks when he's ready to go. Wonder if they do that kind of thing. Because I they certainly were going to consider it last year. He was going to be a sign and flip last year, but then they caught fire in July and decided to keep. And I don't think they regret that, because it is what it is, but I do think they thought they were going to be able to do it again, perhaps. And right now, it does not look like they can do it again. I don't agree with everything that Terry said. I mean, Ian Happ has been on fire in terms of RBIs, and in terms of OPS for a while now. And I know that opinions can be split on Nico, but I think Nico is a very solid ball player. Who was a better hitter than he showed in the first couple of months and is now showing you that. He's in the midst of a run where he is showing you that. This is John in Minnesota on The Score. Good morning, John. You're on Hit and Run.
Good morning, Matt. Appreciate you. Hey, two things. You talked about the minor league system. You know, I think right now it's a little bit more quantity than quality. They do have seven guys in the top 100, but their highest rated prospect is Casey at 31. So I think that's a little bit of an issue. As far as the trade stuff goes, you know, really, I think Tyon for sure, you sell high on guys. He's a guy you can sell high on right now. I mean, the only guy I think you can really get a lot back for would be Steele, and I don't think you want to do that.
No.
I don't think you want to do that. So I think Tyon, if you, and I would dump Bellinger's contract. And the other thing, if you get a few prospects back, try to go out and see if you can find a closer for next year that's got some control. You know, start working on next year's team right now. If that's a possibility, do it, because I think right now the season is, I don't think they've got a chance. When you look at where they're at statistically in a lot of categories, they're not going to make a run. So, you know, if you get rid of Bellinger and Tyon, you're going to have close to $100 million next year.
Yeah, you know, if they could find a way to move Bellinger, and they probably should move Tyon, and it sucks. You hear it in my tone, man. This all sucks. And you wonder, should they have moved Morel in the offseason? If Morel was was considered a jewel on the precipice of a breakout by other teams, should they have done that? I understand why they didn't. I think it's a worthwhile third base experiment. Made a few decent plays last night. Even plays moved over towards the shortstop position. He's been survivable of late at third base, has Morel. It's just offensively, there's a lot of pop and there's not much else. He's making so little. He's still pre-arbitration. Year one of arbitration for Morel is not until 2026. That's a guy that you just try and use and maximize and hope he improves and breaks out, and then you deal with paying him if you need to. But that should be a guy that you use and maximize. Or you identify that you're not going to be able to maximize, and you move on. And they have struggled with some of that. That's for sure. These guys, Caller mentioned Owen Casey earlier. Like, some of the corner outfield prospects, where are they going to play? There's no place to play. And PCA, it's so easy to get smitten with PCA, but boy, that's an incomplete big league player. As Council said, an incomplete offensive player when he was on with me and Danny a couple of weeks ago. Craig Council is supposed to be on with us on Tuesday as well, as we'll be broadcasting from the field. That's right. On Tuesday, Parkins and Spiegel will be doing something we have never done before, broadcasting live on the field at Wrigley. Parkins and Spiegel doing their show. Love those guys. Well, half of them anyway. I really like half of that show a lot. Like
Big Tanny guy.
Oh, I guess a quarter of the show. No, I do like Tanny. So that's half. Three quarters of that show.
Okay.
Big fan.
Yeah, they seem pretty good. Those guys.
It's that one host. That one host is such a blowhard. You know what I mean? My God. And he's always talking music. That guy.
You heard him play his trumpet before?
Oh, what a jamoke.
But what's going on Tuesday, dude?
That dude. Yeah, thank you. Parkins and Spiegel will be doing their show on the field from 2 to 6. We'll be joined by Nico Horner, Craig Council, and other special guests prior to Cubs versus Brewers. Tune in Tuesday starting at 2 right here on The Score and on the free Odyssey app. By the way, baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Back half of the show, kind of guesty. Pitching Ninja at 11 o'clock. That's Rob Friedman. Looking forward to that. Bob Brenly at 12. You'll also hear from today's Hall of Famers, who are going in Cooperstown as MLB in their infinite wisdom. Again, schedules their own Hall of Fame induction against a host of games in their own league. Just great, great, genius stuff every year. Let's go to Jack in Northbrook on The Score. Good morning, Jack. You're on Hit and Run. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm good.
First of all, the first trade I would make is Armstrong for Chisholm of Miami. Miami wants to trade him. This kid is like a tremendous ball player. Armstrong, you know, when I was a kid, they said that the curveball sent every kid back to the minors. He can't catch up to a fastball. I mean, if you can't hit a fastball in the major leagues, you cannot be in the major leagues. And if he is the only guy that they brought up from the minors to play all year, how good is their minor league system?
It's
overrated.
They're not ready. Those kids are not ready, Jack. Jazz Chisholm's a really interesting player. He's super interesting, and a lot of the big hitters like the Yankees and the Mariners are out there and intrigued by Jazz Chisholm. He is arbitration eligible next year. He's not even a free agent until 27. Only 26 years old is Jazz Chisholm, not having the best year of his career. In fact, it's a down year at a 722 OPS, but a lot of the league is down. He is a 12-homer, 19-stolen-base guy. Last year, 19 homers, 22 steals. That would be interesting. Certainly be interesting and exciting.
He's not nearly as good as a defender as PCA, though.
Uh-huh.
Arm strength is not there. Range isn't there. He's a converted second baseman.
See where they're playing him now? Playing him back at second base.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a naked attempt at showcasing Jazz Chisholm as a possible second baseman and center fielder. I do love his electricity. I do love his energy, and
he's
I do love
player.
His skill sets. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like there's a ton of potential there, and there's pop in that bat. Even as a second baseman, there might be more value there. But yeah, I'm not trading a top prospect for Jazz Chisholm.
Well, it's PCA's top prospect.
Yes. Yes, he is.
He drives me nuts.
He's
dude.
A graduated prospect. You're right, though.
He drives me nuts. He had absolutely no shot against Paul Sewald last night. And I know Sewald is good, but Sewald also has blown three saves in the last 3 weeks.
I mean, you knew he didn't have a chance against him before he stepped up in the balance.
Yeah, and it's not like Sewald throws 98 either, but he throws. His release point is way out front, and it's got a lot of carry to it, and it's funky. And it messes with people's minds because you look at the radar gun and you think you should be able to do something against it, and big league hitters just cannot. Caller is right. Jack is right that PCA can't hit a fastball. It's a brutal issue, and they've got a bunch of people with brutal issues. Texter says, I disagree with you about trading Nico. You clear $11.5 million. Got good options to play second base. Shaw, Morrell, Bush could all move to second to find a power-hitting first baseman. I like Nico a lot, but he's expendable. That's a texter on trading Nico Horner. Some good points about Shaw and Morrell and Bush all being able to play over there. Here's another. Hoyer's definitely on the hot seat. The bullpen has been atrocious. Why haven't they traded for a bona fide reliever? Hoyer's in a tough situation. Cubs act like a small market team. Thanks, that's Brian and Batavia. They don't act like a small market team. They act like a big market team trying to do it in their own way and bucking the system a little bit, thinking that they can do it efficiently and do it with intelligent spending, and it does not work this year. That's for damn sure. They don't have a superstar. They don't have a big pile of high-end velocity at the back of that bullpen. And it is biting them in the ass. 312-644-6767. Team of the moment later on. Continuing with your phone calls and your texts on all things Cubs. And an absolute legend. And a guy who I think is eventually going to be a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer is back in town. You'll hear from him when we come back on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Here comes the 1-2. Swing and a miss, strike three. Off-speed pitch, got him. Kyle strikes out Gurriel, his first strikeout of the game. Swing and a miss, beautiful changeup by Kyle Hendricks. Strikes out Christian Walker.
Well, he was doing his job, executing pitches. From my point of view, it was just two pitches left in the zone, but you know, this is baseball. They have a bat too, so they executed well, and that's how we get with the loss tonight.
It's Miguel Amaya talking about Kyle Hendricks from last night. Frustrating first couple of games of the second half for the Chicago Cubs and for Cubs fans. Had to come out smoking. I said before the second half began, they needed a 5-1 homestand with a sweep of the Brewers. I know it's asking a lot Would you take 4-2 with a sweep of the Brewers? Better win your next four then. It's hard to imagine that right now after the last two ball games. Cubs not playing well. Big picture team building questions now out there. We've been looking through salaries and moneyed players, wondering what you can trade and who you can trade. Both of the corner outfielders are locked in with full no-trade clauses. Those guys aren't going anywhere. Jameson Taillon getting talked about. Our own Bruce Levine says most likely not here after the deadline for Jameson Taillon. Nico Horner conversation, wondering about PCA's offensive profile. Got texters wondering why David Bodie didn't pinch hit for PCA last night. Lefty against Sewald in PCA, or would you rather have a righty who's a more adult hitter in David Bodie to maybe get a hit, keep the line moving? Needed one more base runner. That's what you needed. Got to add a guy on second. Needed a guy to scratch and claw and fight his way on base. And yeah, that definitely is something that I would be considering if I'm counsel, is to hit Bodie for PCA. That's a fair question. As much as you love PCA's future and you want to bet on the come, you are not seeing the development. This is Ben in Queens. Couple phone lines open if you want to hop in. 312-644-6767. Ben gets us rolling this segment. Team of the moment in our next segment. What do you say, Ben?
Oh, man, it's just been so bad watching this. I'm going to take the bait, and I'm going to give you three players I think need to be traded, because Jed Hoyer, this is now your last year to make a good team. It didn't happen. They didn't play well, but, you know, this is – okay, first, I've already told you about Kyle Hendricks. You know, Kyle Hendricks has been better, and if I were the Baltimore Orioles watching that game yesterday, I would say, well, that first home run, that ain't a home run in 28 out of 30 ballparks. Hmm. That would have been an out in Camden Yards. Secondly, the second home run, Adley Rutschman wouldn't have called four freaking changeups in a row. You look at the Savant. It's ass backwards, the pitch selection. It was 30% changeups, 25% four-seamers, 23% curveballs, 23% sinker. It's all wrong. So, okay, Kyle Hendricks, I think, could still be a piece you could trade. Secondly, okay, Nico Horner. God, I know we all love him. I love him, too. He's been worth about 4.3 wins above average the past 2 years, which is worth roughly $33 million. He gets paid $11 million. He is super valuable if you keep him. He's also super valuable if you want to move him. A bunch of players, a really good teams. Nico Horner would look great on really good teams. Nico Horner is a really good piece. He has a career OPS plus of 97, okay? But he's a great base runner. He's a great baller. He would look good on a contender. And my third piece, another people that we all love who might have some value, you know, Mark Leiter Jr. Mark Leiter Jr. on a good team and a good bullpen could really be valuable. And I think you could get some pieces for him. It is time to sell. Get in there and sell. Love you, Spiegs. I'm out.
Thank you, Ben. Wow, Ben took the bait and went hard with some thoughtful stuff. I hate the Nico conversation because I see the logic. That's why I hate it so much. I mean, it's a second baseman. There's not a ton of power, and I don't think he's a guy who should be trying to add a lot of power. I think he's at his best when he's just trying to hit lasers, line drives all over the place, you know, and being athletic, letting his game play. I like it that way. That's when Nico really gets rolling, and he's got it rolling right now. And I hate the conversation because I see the wisdom in it. Hendricks, look, I do believe that there is more available with Hendricks. I do believe that. But with an ERA in the sixes, as an expiring deal, I mean, will somebody grab him for like an extra starter? If you're Baltimore, you're getting two starters, you know, and maybe Hendricks is your second one. Hey, let's get a veteran. And Brandon Hyde knows him well. So it's an interesting connection that you make. Brandon Hyde knows him awfully well. And if they do indeed want to get a couple, you know, you could add Kyle Hendricks for your depth. But I think they want a high-end one.
Well, especially because Corbin Burns is probably going to be out the door, right?
Yeah, they need a high-end one who's going to last into next year. I could see them making... This is really when they should make their big offer. I could see them winning the Crochet trade sweepstakes, the Garrett Crochet trade sweepstakes. You need position players of young consequence if you are the White Sox, and the Orioles have a ton of them in the minors. And you could have Crochet as a bullpen weapon for Baltimore, control his innings as much as you need to, and then next year he can step right in as your ace when Corbin Burns leaves. So I think Baltimore makes all the sense in the world. There can be Yankee rumors, and oh, look at that, Spencer Jones now available, according to Bob Nightingale. The Dodgers rumored, if you didn't hear this earlier in the morning, Dodgers apparently have made an offer for Crochet and Luis Robert and maybe even Michael Kopech altogether as they try to recreate the Red Sox bailout trade of Beckett and Carl Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez and Nick Punto from several years ago. But either way, so you've got all that stuff going out there. If I'm a White Sox fan, I am hoping that Baltimore is the fit and you get yourself, you know, a couple of really good young position players. They're loaded with them. So this is when you pounce if you're Baltimore, and they ought to. God, I hate the conversation we're having. I get it and I hate it. Let's go to Tim in Naperville on the Score. Tim, what's up? Good morning. You're on Hit and Run. How are you?
Good morning, Matt. I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate your show, and I always admire your baseball perspective. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, got a question, and I want your perspective. When is Craig Counsell going to start flipping tables? No, I don't mean to be facetious.
I know.
And I don't expect him to go apoplectic like Ditka, but... Look, you're a Chicago sports fan. I remember Joe Maddon sitting people down. You're not going to play. Starlin Castro. Ross sat down Suzuki. Mm-hmm. Phil Jackson. Joel Quenneville. All of a sudden, Taser King would be a healthy scratch.
Mm-hmm.
When is Council going to, show some life, get pissed off? I'll hang up and I'll listen to your perspective.
Hey, Tim, you're not alone in that. It's in me, too. That instinct is absolutely in me too, and it can't be fake. You know, I remember when Lou Piniella, did some stuff. It was like it was very performative, and that can be the case. But I would just hope that it's happening behind the scenes because that's a button you should have been trying to press. Absolutely. Now it's a guy who didn't know his team super well when he got here and had to learn them, but by this point in the year, you know them. The idea of the punitive benching is interesting. Who has been sat down? I loved when Ross did that with Saya last year. Absolutely loved it. I mean, that's playing time. It matters, man. And a little public embarrassment with the right person can be meaningful. Can absolutely be meaningful. You know? It's an interesting thing. Here's what I know. I know that if you're not that guy and you're not going to do it, you better as hell have somebody on your staff who does. And I don't know who that is on the Cubs. I do not know who that is on the staff. I think you'll see a lot of changes to the coaching staff in Council's second year. I think you'll see Craig make some choices and try to get some of his own people in. All right, phone callers, hang on. We're going to get to your Sox calls, and we're going to get to Team of the Moment next segment. But John Lester is in town. John Lester is doing ball games on Marquee. He's on today and I believe tomorrow and Tuesday. We're hoping for a chance to talk to him on Tuesday when Parkins and Spiegel are on the field before Cubs and Brewers. But he was on Marquee pregame on Friday, and he talked about trying broadcasting. I was never so sure that John Lester would be a broadcaster, and maybe he won't be long-term, but here he is giving it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of all up in the air right now. I think, it's something... I think the big thing for me prior to doing any of this was I didn't want to commit to something I couldn't see myself doing. And, if I commit to something, I'm going to see it through, and I don't... best part about being retired is, I got the time to go to the games and the practices and stuff like that. And if, you commit to something and it's too much, then, I start missing that stuff again, and that's not what I want to do. So I mean, I think this is just kind of play by ear and see, you know, see what where it kind of takes me. But it's definitely not a full-time job. I promise you that.
I promise you it's not a full-time job. Why would that guy want a full-time job? He was asked about his buddy David Ross and said he has had conversations. He has indeed had conversations with his pal and his teammate in multiple spots, David Ross.
I talked to him. What is today? I talked to him Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday. He was actually going to be up around Atlanta for his daughter's something, volleyball or whatever. But we had a couple things going on, and then I was coming here, you know, yesterday. So we couldn't get together. But, you know, I talked to him periodically. You know, I think to answer your second part of your question, I mean, it's obviously when it's your buddy, you know, it's a little harder to kind of, you know, see what's going on. But when you kind of step back and look at it as a business aspect, you know, I mean, stuff like that happens all the time. So, you know, you just have to think that the Cubs are trying to do what's in their best interest. Like I said, when it's one of your buddies, it's like, well, that sucks.
Yeah, it did suck. A lot of people thought it sucked. And then John Lester talking about possibly maybe one day getting into baseball's Hall of Fame.
I don't think about that. Like I said before, I mean, if that's something, if I get that phone call, obviously I'll be the happiest person in the world. But it's not. I mean, I'm not counting the days down till that day by any means. You know, I don't. My big thing is I don't want to get my hopes up and, you know, be disappointed. So take it day by day, and hopefully my name's on there, and there's a few people that decide to check that box, and, you know, kind of see what goes from there.
I would check that box. I would vote for John Lester. But then again, I would vote for Mark Burley. I think both those guys fall into some similar territory as innings eaters, as reliable and available people and available pitchers. I could do a whole show on John Lester and Mark Burley's Hall of Fame case. But let me say that overall, the counting stats, of course, fall a little bit short. The dominant stats probably also fall a little bit short. But then you've got Lester as a truly iconic pitcher for two incredible franchises, notable franchises, and he won World Series with both of them, helping to bust the Cubs' curse. I think those soft factors are eventually going to get John Lester in the Hall of Fame. I have believed that Burley's going to get there too. Now, it may take Burley, you know, all of his 10 years here on the ballot, but I do believe that Burley will end up being in the Hall of Fame, and I think Lester will be too, as starting pitchers are a trickier and trickier case as the years go on. I, of course, could be wrong. 312-644-6767. Top of the hour, Pitching Ninja. Team of the Moment next, and your calls on all things Sox and Cubs. Keep it here on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Chopper coming to the plate. It is tied. O'Neill Cruz gets it done. And going to third, McCutchen. Taylor scores. Still one out. There it is. How do you like this start to the second half of this season? The Pirates are over 500. They've come back an improbable win to beat the best team in baseball on a night where 39,530 are here to see it. The largest regular season crowd since April 13, 2015.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Another 39,000 at PNC Park in Pittsburgh last night as the Pirates win again. Those highlights from our friend Greg Brown of the Pittsburgh Pirates from Friday night. They came back and they beat the Phillies and now have beat them twice in a row, and they go for a sweep today. The Pirates have won six games in a row. They are absolutely rolling. O'Neill Cruz, who had a big big hit there in that highlight that you heard. RBI game tying single, had three hits or three RBIs last night with a double and a two run homer. And the Pirates right now are just a half game behind the Diamondbacks and the Mets for the third and final wild card spot in the National League. O'Neill Cruz, four extra base hits and six RBI in the last two wins. Brian Reynolds is a star, hitting .351 over the last 30 days and an all-star again. Andrew McCutchen with a big hit last night. He's the OG for a feisty young bunch. And this team is all about the starting pitching. Luis Ortiz, great last night. He's been great in four starts. But you know about Paul Skenes. You know about Jarrett Jones. You know about Bailey Falter, perhaps. Marco Gonzalez is the old head starting pitcher, the fifth starter who goes today. Their starting pitchers have the fourth best ERA among all rotations in MLB. At 3.56. Overall, last 30 days, the entire pitching staff's been good. Seventh best ERA in baseball the last 30 days. Aroldis Chapman sometimes getting save opportunities there now. And the offense, not great, but some of those guys. O'Neill Cruz has so many skills, dude. He's outrageously talented. He just kind of sometimes plays and goes about his life as if he does not care. Doesn't care about nothing. But when he does care, whew, you got something unlocked there. The other night on Friday, he hit a ball so damn hard off a wall. It was the second hardest hit ball in baseball.
It was like 118 miles per hour.
Yeah. Look, feel free to look on Baseball Savant, folks. He's got the number one and the number two. He's that guy. In a league where Giancarlo Stanton exists, O'Neill Cruz hits it harder than anybody. So the Pirates, folks, they are the team of the moment. I mentioned they have won six in a row. They have won eight of their last 10, and they're better than the Cubs, as so many are. They're also a lot better than the White Sox, who are 13 games behind the win total, 15 games behind the loss pace to tie the Mets, who went 40 and 120 and 1. There was one game they didn't play. So the 1962 Mets went 40 and 120 and 1. So you got to get to 41 wins, or really 43 wins, which is why you need 16. White Sox are at 17 or 27 wins right now. This is some of the worst math I've ever done live on the air. I'd like to apologize to all involved. They have 27 wins. They need to get to 43 wins to avoid having 120 losses. So that's why they need 16 wins from here on out. Can they do it? Nobody knows. But they will get worse very soon as they trade veterans away. This is Ron in the South Side on the Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Ron.
Hey, good morning, Steve. So I'm assuming that the White Sox will never be team of the moment. I just found a betting person. And, you know, I love this segment, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Probably not. No, man. It's slim pickets.
Right. Real quick. And, you know, we just go back and forth with the crow safety. One thing you mentioned, that it's really a seller's mark. And Speed, the Sox, see, my thing is, you don't know if it's going to ever be like this. Well, you have the number one piece in a seller's mark. But look here. Look at the team, Speed, that went all the way in for this season. The Dodgers, the Phillies, the Yankees. Isn't Soto going to become a free agent?
Yes.
These teams are playing for it this year. And you have the number one. Just the fact that you mentioned the Yankees may be willing to trade Spencer Jones, it lets you know that the market for Gerrit Crochet. And what I have been saying for the last month or more, the obvious team is the Baltimore Orioles,
yes,
because,
yeah,
as you all mentioned, Corbett Burns is a free agent next year. This is it for them. And lastly, I read that they did draft maybe another infielder, indicating, Speeds, that they are probably willing now to move those top prospects, which are infielders. Plus, those infielders are pretty much blocked from, you know, from coming out. So, to me, that's the most obvious. Lastly, though, if you can move Crochet and Robert to the Dodgers in Copay, that means you're going to get something big. So, Speaks, this week I'm trying to convince you.
I know. It's not going to work, Ron. I don't want to trade Garrett Crochet. I don't want to do it. Dude's a stud. Dude's an ace. And he's got all the soft factors of the ace, too. He's a grown-up. He's grown up before your eyes here. The other thing is you don't have any – I mean, Noah Schultz threw, what, 4 no-hit innings for Birmingham last night? Jairo Inciarte threw 5 no-hit innings in the first game. They had a doubleheader. So they've got some young arms coming. Noah Schultz will be the closest thing you have to ace caliber, and maybe he'll be up at some point this year. But what are we doing here? What are we doing? They'll probably do it, Ron. You'll get your way. I don't want him to, but they probably will. This is Lynn in Chicago on the score. Hello, Lynn. Good morning. Welcome to Hit and Run.
Good morning, Speaks. I just wanted to share that I was at the Pirates game Friday night against the Phillies.
Wow.
Awesome ballpark. The thing about that was you never felt like the Pirates were out of it. Phillies took 3-0, top of the first.
Yeah.
They came right back. And then the guy, Gonzalez, he was grounding out, but he was racing to first, and then he hits the walk-off. And with the Cubs, it's just like if they're down 3-0, it's almost like you feel like it's over. The Pirates, you never felt that it was over. The energy was electric.
Man, that's
such a great.
Thank you, Lynn. And that's what it felt like last year for the Cubs for a lot of the season. Right up until September, it felt like that. They were having fun, and they were good, and they seemed young and had a spark, and it was like it felt exciting. And that is certainly not the case. Yeah, Pirates were down 3-0 after the top of the first. And at one point, they were down 7-4, obviously, and came all the way back. Man. Must be nice. Must be nice to be young and hungry and have that feeling in a beautiful ballpark that everything is possible. 39,000 in Pittsburgh, man. I love when a fan base shows up. By the way, Greg Brown, that broadcaster, will be a guest coming up on the PBP in the next couple of weeks. He is the losingest broadcaster in the history of baseball. Even more than Herb Score back with Cleveland back in the day. No one has been behind the mic for more losses than Greg Brown of the Pirates. He's a good dude. So, rooting for that guy. And Pirates fans, if it's not going to be the Cubs, let it be the Pirates. You know? Texter had said, Spiegs, I'm not ready for football season, but Sox and Cubs are no fun. Who are some teams we can follow the rest of the way to salvage the season? Well, I just gave you one with the Pittsburgh Pirates, if you can stomach it. There are others. We'll try to get to that throughout the rest of the show. Pitching Ninja, Rob Friedman on the state of pitching around MLB. Bob Brenly in 1 hour. Bonus Hit and Run until 12:45 today with me, Matt Spiegel. Keep it here on the score. The pursuit of nastiness.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Will Jameson Taillon be a Cub past July 30th?
I would say most likely not. 2 years of contract control at a $17 million a year. A very good and reliable pitcher. But if the consensus and with Jed Hoyer in his front office is we're not winning this year, then you're going in with a 32-plus-year-old pitcher with 2 years left. can that $17 million a year be spent in a better way?
Jameson Taillon very much on the trading block, according to our Bruce Levine. Man, life comes at you fast, Cub fans. If Jameson Taillon's on the trading block, that is a massive concession for this year, obviously. But is it a willing, willful concession for next year, too? I mean, Taillon is going to make $18 million next year and $18 million in 26. That's a lot of money you're trying to get off the books. I don't know what kind of prospect capital you're going to get. That's a lot of money for a pitcher who is very good at staying healthy and going deep into games. And this year has an ERA of 3.10, which is very, very good by league standards. Was a 3.3 ERA in June over five starts. And Jameson Taillon has gone at least five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In 10 straight starts, he's gone at least five innings. Gone seven in a couple of those. He's gone at least six in six of those. Seven of those. Seven of his last 10 starts, he's gone at least six innings. That's legit. With an ERA in the mid threes, that is very legit in MLB these days. So can you play the beginning of that again, Sean? I want to hear the tone of Bruce's answer, which sounded kind of declarative, and Bruce knows stuff, folks. This is from inside the clubhouse yesterday, David Haw and Bruce Levine talking about Cubs offerings at the deadline.
Will Jameson Taillon be a Cub past July 30th?
I would say most likely not.
That's enough right there. So most likely not. Woof. Okay, so Taillon takes 18 mil off the books for next year and the year after that, giving you some renewed flexibility. Still surprised that they'd want to sell him. I mean, you got to sell pieces that make money, pieces that have money attached, and you don't have a lot of those options. Would you guys sell on Ian Happ, who makes 21 mil next year and 19 mil the year after that? Probably you can't, though, because he's got a no trade clause, which he wanted badly. He loves it here. His wife is from here. So, I mean, you could try and talk to Ian Happ and convince him, but I don't think that's going to happen. Would you sell on Seiya Suzuki? Would you trade Seiya Suzuki? I'd need to know what that contract is in terms of a no trade. Looking at the contract itself on Cott's contract, I do not see a specific no trade. Oh, there it is. Full no trade clause for Seiya Suzuki. Full no trade clause. So there you go. A no trade clause for both Happ and Suzuki. So you are locked in at the corners. Man. You are locked in at the corners at relatively reasonable prices as long as they are producing. And they are producing. Seiya and Happ and Bush are the three hitters who are producing. So you can't deal either of those corners. Can't deal either of them. Full no trade clauses for Seiya Suzuki and Ian Happ. Dansby Swanson, nobody's going to give you anything for him in year two of a $177 million deal when he can't hit. Nico Horner, see, this is why guys like Nico and Taillon come up, because they have a little money on the books. Nico making 11.5 next year, 12 the year after that. God, I don't want them to trade Nico Horner. And that's not because we talk to him every week on Parkins and Spiegel. I think that dude is a ball player. And he's hitting again. He's hitting 380 during the 12-game hit streak. Didn't get hits last night, but hit the ball very hard last night. Drew a walk last night. So dependable at second. Can play short in a pinch at a very high level. You should not be trading Nico Horner. And if you are, it's an indication of much bigger and deeper problems. So maybe you have to deal Taillon, right? Maybe you have to find a way to get that money off if you're not going to just steamroll and keep throwing money after it and go through the second level of the CBT and up towards the third level of the CBT. Let's talk to you guys at 312-644-6767. Terry is in St. Charles. Terry's in St. Charles and is now on Hit and Run. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Matt. Hey, love your show, man. Appreciate you taking my call.
You got it.
I'm all for trading Tyone. I'm all for considering trading Morrell because they brought it up yesterday on Fox. One of the few points they made yesterday on Fox is that Morrell isn't hitting the junk pitches. He's only hitting fastballs. When he has hit a junk pitch, it was just a bad pitch. Okay. And he's not hit like he was supposed to this year. I love the guy, but we need the bat. That's why he's playing third base, and his defense has improved, but it's not great. And they've got guys down in the minors who can come up. I love Nico, so I am with you. I don't want to trade him. Hap, I know they've got a no trade. I agree with you, but I don't agree in the fact that he's been hitting because it's been inconsistent. For a good portion of the first part of the season, he wasn't hitting. And the same thing goes for Suzuki. We need, consistency. But what I really was wondering what you think of this is I don't blame Council. Council can only put the players on the field that he's been given, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I blame Hoyer, and I wonder if Ricketts has said we don't go over the threshold unless we're contending. And Hoyer has made some poor decisions as far as players he signed and has given to Council to work with. So just my thoughts. I'd appreciate hearing what you think about that.
Thanks, Terry. The team building leaves a lot of questions. It really does. Because you've got some dudes in your core that you've locked up who are solid players, but they're not great players. They're just not. Should Ian Happ be making $21, $22 million for what he is as a left fielder? Should Seiya Suzuki be making the money that he is as a right fielder with an OPS around 8? Have they overrated Seiya Suzuki, who continues to be a problem out there in right field from time to time? They bring back Cody Bellinger for $25 million plus for next year and the year after that. I think they really thought that they could deal Bellinger this year if things were looking bad. But now Bellinger hurt, and I don't think they could deal him. I mean, you can trade guys on the injured list. I'd be interested to see if they just kind of do a salary dump with Bellinger here. If it gets that bad, just get anything that you can and let the Yankees bring up Bellinger in 3 weeks when he's ready to go. Wonder if they do that kind of thing. Because I they certainly were going to consider it last year. He was going to be a sign and flip last year, but then they caught fire in July and decided to keep. And I don't think they regret that because it is what it is, but I do think they could. They thought they were going to be able to do it again, perhaps. And right now, it does not look like they can do it again. I don't agree with everything that Terry said. I mean, Ian Happ has been on fire in terms of RBIs, and in terms of OPS for a while now. And I know that opinions can be split on Nico, but I think Nico is a very solid ball player. Who was a better hitter than he showed in the first couple of months and is now showing you that. He's in the midst of a run where he is showing you that. This is John in Minnesota on the score. Good morning, John. You're on Hit and Run.
Good morning, Matt. Appreciate you. Hey, two things. You talked about the minor league system. You know, I think right now it's a little bit more quantity than quality. They do have 7 guys in the top 100, but their highest rated prospect is Casey at 31. So I think that's a little bit of an issue. As far as the trade stuff goes, I think Tyon for sure, you sell high on guys. He's a guy you can sell high on right now. I mean, the only guy I think you can really get a lot back for would be Steele, and I don't think you'll want to do that.
No.
I don't think you want to do that. So I think Tyon, and I would dump Bellinger's contract. And the other thing, if you get a few prospects back, try to go out and see if you can find a closer for next year that's got some control. Start working on next year's team right now. If that's a possibility, do it. Because I think right now the season is – I don't think they've got a chance when you look at where they're at statistically in a lot of categories, they're not going to make a run. So, if you get rid of Bellinger and Tyon, you're going to have close to $100 million next year.
Yeah, you know, if they can find a way to move Bellinger, and they probably should move Tyon, and it sucks. You hear it in my tone, man. This all sucks. And you wonder, should they have moved Morel in the offseason? If Morel was was considered a jewel on the precipice of a breakout by other teams, should they have done that? I understand why they didn't. I think it's a worthwhile third base experiment. Made a few decent plays last night. Even plays moved over towards the shortstop position. He's been survivable of late at third base, has Morel. Just offensively, there's a lot of pop and there's not much else. He's making so little. He's still pre-arbitration. Year one of arbitration for Morel is not till 2026. That's a guy that you just try and use and maximize and hope he improves and breaks out, and then you deal with paying him if you need to. But that should be a guy that you use and maximize. Or you identify that you're not going to be able to maximize and you move on. And they have struggled with some of that. That's for sure. These guys, Caller mentioned Owen Casey earlier, like some of the corner outfield prospects, where are they going to play? There's no place to play. And PCA, it's so easy to get smitten with PCA, but boy, that's an incomplete big league player. As Council said, an incomplete offensive player when he was on with me and Danny a couple of weeks ago. Craig Council is supposed to be on with us on Tuesday as well, as we'll be broadcasting from the field. That's right. On Tuesday, Parkins and Spiegel will be doing something we have never done before, broadcasting live on the field at Wrigley. Parkins and Spiegel doing their show. Love those guys. Well, half of them anyway. I really like half of that show a lot. Like
Big Tanny guy.
Oh, I guess a quarter of the show. No, I do like Tanny. So that's half. Three quarters of that show.
Okay.
Big fan.
Yeah, they seem pretty good. Those guys.
It's that one host. That one host is such a blowhard. You know what I mean? My God. And he's always talking music. That guy.
You heard him play his trumpet before?
Oh, what a jamoke.
But what's going on Tuesday, dude?
That dude. Yeah, thank you. Parkins and Spiegel will be doing their show on the field from 2 to 6. We'll be joined by Nico Horner, Craig Council, and other special guests prior to Cubs versus Brewers. Tune in Tuesday starting at 2 right here on The Score and on the free Odyssey app. By the way, baseball coverage on The Score is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Back half of the show, kind of guesty. Pitching Ninja at 11 o'clock. That's Rob Friedman. Looking forward to that. Bob Brenly at 12. You'll also hear from today's Hall of Famers who are going in Cooperstown as MLB in their infinite wisdom. Again, schedules their own Hall of Fame induction against a host of games in their own league. Just great, great, genius stuff every year. Let's go to Jack in Northbrook on The Score. Good morning, Jack. You're on Hit and Run. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm good.
First of all, the first trade I would make is Armstrong for Chisholm of Miami. Miami wants to trade him. This kid is like a tremendous ball player. Armstrong, you know, when I was a kid, they said that the curveball sent every kid back to the minors. He can't catch up to a fastball. If you can't hit a fastball in the major leagues, you cannot be in the major leagues. And if he is the only guy that they brought up from the minors to play all year, how good is their minor league system?
It's
overrated.
They're not ready. Those kids are not ready, Jack. Jazz Chisholm's a really interesting player. He's super interesting, and a lot of the big hitters like the Yankees and the Mariners are out there and intrigued by Jazz Chisholm. He is arbitration eligible next year. He's not even a free agent until 27. Only 26 years old is Jazz Chisholm, not having the best year of his career. In fact, it's a down year at a 722 OPS, but a lot of the league is down. He is a 12-homer, 19-stolen-base guy. Last year, 19 homers, 22 steals. That would be interesting. Should certainly be interesting and exciting.
He's not nearly as good as a defender as PCA, though.
Uh-huh.
Arm strength is not there. Range isn't there. He's a converted second baseman.
See where they're playing him now? Playing him back at second base.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a naked attempt at showcasing Jazz Chisholm as a possible second baseman and center fielder. I do love his electricity. I do love his energy. And
he's
I do love
player.
His skill sets. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a ton of potential there, and there's pop in that bat. Even as a second baseman, there might be more value there. But, yeah, I'm not trading a top prospect for Jazz Chisholm.
Well, it's PCA's top prospect.
Yes. Yes, he is.
He drives me nuts.
He's
dude.
A graduated prospect. You're right, though.
He drives me nuts. He had absolutely no shot against Paul Sewald last night. And I know Sewald is good, but Sewald also has blown three saves in the last 3 weeks.
I mean, you knew he didn't have a chance against him before he stepped up in the balance.
Yeah, and it's not like Sewald throws 98 either, but his release point is way out front, and it's got a lot of carry to it, and it's funky. And it messes with people's minds because you look at the radar gun and you think you should be able to do something against it, and big league hitters just cannot. Caller is right. Jack is right that PCA can't hit a fastball. It's a brutal issue. And they've got a bunch of people with brutal issues. Texter says, I disagree with you about trading Nico. You clear $11.5 million. Got good options to play second base. Shaw, Morrell, Bush could all move to second to find a power hitting first baseman. I like Nico a lot, but he's expendable. That's a Texter on trading Nico Horner. Some good points about Shaw and Morrell and Bush all being able to play over there. Here's another. Hoyer's definitely on the hot seat. The bullpen has been atrocious. Why haven't they traded for a bona fide reliever? Hoyer's in a tough situation. Cubs act like a small market team. Thanks, that's Brian and Batavia. They don't act like a small market team. They act like a big market team trying to do it in their own way and bucking the system a little bit, thinking that they can do it efficiently and do it with intelligent spending, and it does not work this year. That's for damn sure. They don't have a superstar. They don't have a big pile of high-end velocity at the back of that bullpen. And it is biting them in the ass. 312-644-6767. Team of the moment later on. Continuing with your phone calls and your texts on all things Cubs. And an absolute legend. And a guy who I think is eventually going to be a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer is back in town. You'll hear from him when we come back on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Here comes the 1-2. Swing and a miss, strike three. Off-speed pitch, got him. Kyle strikes out Gurriel, his first strikeout of the game. Swing and a miss, beautiful changeup by Kyle Hendricks. Strikes out Christian Walker.
Well, he was doing his job, executing pitches. From my point of view, it was just two pitches left in the zone, but you know, this is baseball. They have a bat too, so they execute it well, and that's how we get with the loss tonight.
It's Miguel Amaya talking about Kyle Hendricks from last night. Frustrating first couple of games of the second half for the Chicago Cubs and for Cubs fans. Had to come out smoking. I said before the second half began, they needed a 5-1 homestand with a sweep of the Brewers. I know it's asking a lot. Would you take 4-2 with a sweep of the Brewers? Better win your next four then. It's hard to imagine that right now after the last two ball games. Cubs not playing well. Big picture team building questions now out there. We've been looking through salaries and moneyed players, wondering what you can trade and who you can trade. Both of the corner outfielders are locked in with full no-trade clauses. Those guys aren't going anywhere. Jameson Taillon getting talked about. Our own Bruce Levine says most likely not here after the deadline for Jameson Taillon. Nico Horner conversation. Wondering about PCA's offensive profile. Got texters wondering why David Bote didn't pinch hit for PCA last night. Lefty against Sewald in PCA, or would you rather have a righty who's a more adult hitter in David Bote to maybe get a hit, keep the line moving? Needed one more base runner. That's what you needed. Got to add a guy on second. Needed a guy to scratch and claw and fight his way on base. And yeah, that definitely definitely is something that I would be considering if I'm counsel, is to hit Bodie for PCA. That's a fair question. As much as you love PCA's future and you want to bet on the come, you are not seeing the development. This is Ben in Queens. A couple phone lines open if you want to hop in. 312-644-6767. Ben gets us rolling this segment. Team of the moment in our next segment. What do you say, Ben?
Oh, man, it's just been so bad watching this. I'm going to take the bait, and I'm going to give you three players I think need to be traded, because Jed Hoyer, this is now your last year to make a good team. It didn't happen. They didn't play well, but, you know, this is – okay, first I've already told you about Kyle Hendricks. You know, Kyle Hendricks has been better, and if I were the Baltimore Orioles watching that game yesterday, I would say, well, that first home run, that ain't a home run in 28 out of 30 ballparks. That would have been out in Camden Yards. Secondly, the second home run, Adley Rutschman wouldn't have called four freaking changeups in a row. You look at the Savant. It's ass backwards, the pitch selection. It was 30% changeups, 25% four-seamers, 23% curveballs, 23% sinker. It's all wrong. So, okay, Kyle Hendricks, I think, could still be a piece you could trade. Secondly, okay, Nico Hoerner. God, I know we all love him. I love him, too. He's been worth about 4.3 wins above average the past 2 years, which is worth roughly $33 million. He gets paid $11 million. He is super valuable if you keep him. He's also super valuable if you want to move him. A bunch of players, a really good teams. Nico Hoerner would look great on really good teams. Nico Hoerner is a really good piece. He has a career OPS plus of 97, okay? But he's a great base runner. He's a great baller. He would look good on a contender. And my third piece, and other people that we all love who might have some value, you know, Mark Leiter Jr. on a good team and a good bullpen could really be valuable. And I think you could get some pieces for him. It is time to sell. Get in there and sell. Love you, Spiegs. I'm out.
Thank you, Ben. Wow, Ben took the bait and went hard with some thoughtful stuff. I hate the Nico conversation because I see the logic. That's why I hate it so much. I mean, it's a second baseman. There's not a ton of power, and I don't think he's a guy who should be trying to add a lot of power. I think he's at his best when he's just trying to hit lasers, line drives all over the place, you know, and being athletic, letting his game play. I like it that way. That's when Nico really gets rolling, and he's got it rolling right now. And I hate the conversation because I see the wisdom in it. Hendricks, look, I do believe that there is more available with Hendricks. I do believe that. But with an ERA in the sixes, as an expiring deal, I mean, will somebody grab him for like an extra starter? If you're Baltimore, you're getting two starters, you know, and maybe Hendricks is your second one. Hey, let's get a veteran. And Brandon Hyde knows him well. So it's an interesting connection that you make. Brandon Hyde knows him awfully well. And if they do indeed want to get a couple, you know, you could add Kyle Hendricks for your depth. But I think they want a high-end one.
Well, especially because Corbin Burns is probably going to be out the door, right?
Yeah, they need a high-end one who's going to last into next year. I could see them making... This is really when they should make their big offer. I could see them winning the Crochet trade sweepstakes, the Garrett Crochet trade sweepstakes. You need position players of young consequence if you are the White Sox, and the Orioles have a ton of them in the minors. And you could have Crochet as a bullpen weapon for Baltimore, control his innings as much as you need to, and then next year he can step right in as your ace when Corbin Burns leaves. So I think Baltimore makes all the sense in the world. There can be Yankee rumors, and oh, look at that, Spencer Jones now available, according to Bob Nightingale. The Dodgers rumored, if you didn't hear this earlier in the morning, Dodgers apparently have made an offer for Crochet and Luis Robert and maybe even Michael Kopech altogether as they try to recreate the Red Sox bailout trade of Beckett and Carl Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez and Nick Punto from several years ago. But either way, so you've got all that stuff going out there. If I'm a White Sox fan, I am hoping that Baltimore is the fit and you get yourself, you know, a couple of really good young position players. They're loaded with them. So this is when you pounce if you're Baltimore, and they ought to. God, I hate the conversation we're having. I get it, and I hate it. Let's go to Tim in Naperville on the Score. Tim, what's up? Good morning. You're on Hit and Run. How are you?
Good morning, Matt. I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your show, and I always admire your baseball perspective, so thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, got a question, and I want your perspective. When is Craig Counsell going to start flipping tables? and I don't mean to be facetious.
I know.
And I don't expect him to go apoplectic like Ditka. But look, you're a Chicago sports fan. I remember Joe Maddon sitting people down. You're not going to play. Starlin Castro. Ross sat down Suzuki. Mm-hmm. Phil Jackson. Joel Quenneville. All of a sudden, Taser King would be a healthy scratch.
Mm-hmm.
When is Counsell going to... You know, show some life. Get pissed off. I'll hang up and I'll listen to your perspective.
Hey Tim, you're not alone in that. It's in me too. That instinct is absolutely in me too. And it can't be fake. You know, I remember when Lou Piniella, did some stuff. It was like it was very performative, and that can be the case, but. I would just hope that it's happening behind the scenes, because that's a button you should have been trying to press. Absolutely. Now, it's a guy who didn't know his team super well when he got here and had to learn them. But by this point in the year, you know them. The idea of the punitive benching is interesting. Who has been sat down? I loved when Ross did that with Saya last year. Absolutely loved it. I mean, that's playing time. It matters, man. And a little public embarrassment with the right person can be meaningful. Can absolutely be meaningful. You know, it's really an interesting thing. Here's what I know. I know that if you're not that guy and you're not going to do it, you better as hell have somebody on your staff who does. And I don't know who that is on the Cubs. I do not know. Who that is on the staff. I think you'll see a lot of changes to the coaching staff in Counsell's second year. I think you'll see Craig make some choices and try to get some of his own people in. All right, phone callers, hang on. We're going to get to your Sox calls and we're going to get to Team of the Moment next segment. But John Lester is in town. John Lester is doing ball games on Marquee. He's on today and I believe tomorrow and Tuesday. We're hoping for a chance to talk to him on Tuesday when Parkins and Spiegel are on the field before Cubs and Brewers. But he was on Marquee pregame on Friday, and he talked about trying broadcasting. I was never so sure that John Lester would be a broadcaster, and maybe he won't be long-term, but here he is giving it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of all up in the air right now. I think, it's something... I think the big thing for me prior to doing any of this was I didn't want to commit to something I couldn't see myself doing. And, you know, if I commit to something, I'm going to see it through. And I don't, you know, best part about being retired is, you know, I got the time to go to the games and the practices and stuff like that. And if, you know, you commit to something and it's too much, then, you know, I start missing that stuff again. And that's not what I want to do. So, I mean, I think this is just kind of play by ear and see, see what, where it kind of takes me, but it's definitely not a full-time job. I promise you that.
Ha, I promise you it's not a full-time job. Why would that guy want a full-time job? He was asked about his buddy David Ross and said he has had conversations. He has indeed had conversations with his pal and his teammate in multiple spots, David Ross.
I talked to him, what is today? Talked to him Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday. He was actually going to be up around Atlanta for his daughter's something, volleyball or whatever. But we had a couple things going on, and then I was coming here, you know, yesterday. So we couldn't get together. But, I talked to him periodically. You know, I think to answer your second part of your question, I mean, it's obviously when it's your buddy, you know, it's a little harder to kind of, you know, see what's going on. But when you kind of step back and look at it as a business aspect, you know, I mean, stuff like that happens all the time. So, you know, you just have to think that the Cubs are trying to do what's in their best interest. Like I said, when it's one of your buddies, it's like, well, that sucks.
Yeah. It did suck. A lot of people thought it sucked. And then John Lester talking about possibly maybe one day getting into baseball's Hall of Fame.
I don't think about that. Like I said before, I mean, if that's something, if I get that phone call, obviously I'll be the happiest person in the world. But it's not. I mean, I'm not counting the days down till that day by any means. I don't. My big thing is I don't want to get my hopes up and, you know, be disappointed. So take it day by day, and hopefully my name's on there, and there's a few people that decide to check that box, and, you know, kind of see what goes from there.
I would check that box. I would vote for John Lester. But then again, I would vote for Mark Burley. I think both those guys fall into some similar territory as innings eaters, as reliable and available people and available pitchers. I could do a whole show on John Lester and Mark Burley's Hall of Fame case. But let me say that overall, the counting stats, of course, fall a little bit short. The dominant stats probably also fall a little bit short. But then you've got Lester as a truly iconic pitcher for two incredible franchises, notable franchises, and he won World Series with both of them, helping to bust the Cubs' curse. I think those soft factors are eventually going to get John Lester in the Hall of Fame. I have believed that Burley's going to get there too. Now, it may take Burley, all of his 10 years here on the ballot, but I do believe that Burley will end up being in the Hall of Fame, and I think Lester will be too, as starting pitchers are a trickier and trickier case as the years go on. I, of course, could be wrong. 312-644-6767. Top of the hour, Pitching Ninja. Team of the Moment next, and your calls on all things Sox and Cubs. Keep it here on The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Chopper coming to the plate. It is tied. O'Neill Cruz gets it done. And going to third, McCutchen. Taylor scores. Still one out.
There it is.
How do you like this start to the second half of this season? The Pirates are over 500. They've come back an improbable win to beat the best team in baseball on a night where 39,530 are here to see it. The largest regular season crowd since April 13, 2015.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Another 39,000 at PNC Park in Pittsburgh last night as the Pirates win again. Those highlights from our friend Greg Brown of the Pittsburgh Pirates from Friday night. They came back and they beat the Phillies and now have beat them twice in a row, and they go for a sweep today. The Pirates have won six games in a row. They are absolutely rolling. O'Neill Cruz, who had a big, big hit there in that highlight that you heard. RBI game-tying single, had three RBIs last night with a double and a two-run homer. And the Pirates right now are just a half game behind the Diamondbacks and the Mets for the third and final wild card spot in the National League. O'Neill Cruz, four extra base hits and six RBI in the last two wins. Brian Reynolds is a star, hitting .351 over the last 30 days and an all-star again. Andrew McCutchen with a big hit last night. He's the OG for a feisty young bunch. And this team is all about the starting pitching. Luis Ortiz, great last night. He's been great in four starts. But you know about Paul Skeens. You know about Jarrett Jones. You know about Bailey Falter, perhaps. Marco Gonzalez is the old head starting pitcher, the fifth starter who goes today. Their starting pitchers have the fourth best ERA among all rotations in MLB. at 3.56. Overall, last 30 days, the entire pitching staff's been good. Seventh best ERA in baseball the last 30 days. Aroldis Chapman sometimes getting save opportunities there now. And the offense, not great, but some of those guys. O'Neill Cruz has so many skills, dude. He's outrageously talented. He just kind of sometimes plays and goes about his life as if he does not care. Doesn't care about nothing. But when he does care, whew, you got something unlocked there. The other night on Friday, he hit a ball so damn hard off a wall. It was the second hardest hit ball in baseball.
It was like 118 miles per hour.
Yeah. Look, feel free to look on Baseball Savant, folks. He's got the number one and the number two. He's that guy. In a league where Giancarlo Stanton exists, O'Neill Cruz hits it harder than anybody. So the Pirates, folks, they are the team of the moment. I mentioned they have won six in a row. They have won eight of their last 10, and they're better than the Cubs, as so many are. They're also a lot better than the White Sox, who are 13 games behind the win total, 15 games behind the loss pace to tie the Mets, who went 40-120-1. There was one game they didn't play. So the 1962 Mets went 40-120-1. So you got to get to 41 wins, or really 43 wins, which is why you need 16. White Sox are at 17 or 27 wins right now. This is some of the worst math I've ever done live on the air. I'd like to apologize to all involved. They have 27 wins. They need to get to 43 wins to avoid having 120 losses. So that's why they need 16 wins from here on out. Can they do it? Nobody knows. But they will get worse very soon as they trade veterans away. This is Ron in the South Side on the Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Ron.
Hey, good morning, Steve. So I'm assuming that the White Sox will never be team of the moment. I was a betting person. And, you know, I love this segment, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Probably not. No, man. It's slim pickets.
Right. Real quick. And, you know, we just go back and forth with the crow safety. One thing you mentioned, that it's really a seller's mark. And Speed, the Sox, see, my thing is, you don't know if it's going to ever be like this. Well, you have the number one piece in a seller's mark. But look here. Look at the team, Speed, that went all the way in for this season. The Dodgers, the Phillies, the Yankees. Isn't Soto going to become a free agent?
Yes, yes.
These teams are playing for it this year. And you have the number one. Just the fact that you mentioned the Yankees may be willing to trade Spencer Jones, it lets you know that the market for Gerrit Crochet. And what I have been saying for the last month or more, the obvious team is the Baltimore Orioles.
Yes,
because,
yeah,
as you all mentioned, Corbett Burns is a free agent next year. This is it for them. And lastly, I read that they did draft maybe another infielder, indicating, Speed, that they are probably willing now to move those top prospects, which are infielders. Plus, those infielders are pretty much blocked from coming up. So, to me, that's the most obvious. Lastly, though, if you can move Crochet and Robert to the Dodgers in Copay, that means you're going to get something big. So, Speed, each week I'm trying to convince you.
I know. It's not going to work, Ron. I don't want to trade Gerrit Crochet. I don't want to do it. Dude's a stud. Dude's an ace. And he's got all the soft factors of the ace, too. He's a grown-up. He's grown up before your eyes here. The other thing is, you don't have any. I mean, Noah Schultz threw, what, 4 no-hit innings for Birmingham last night? Jairo Inciarte threw 5 no-hit innings in the first game. They had a doubleheader. So they've got some young arms coming. Noah Schultz will be the closest thing you have to ace caliber. And maybe he'll be up at some point this year. But what are we doing here? What are we doing? They'll probably do it, Ron. You'll get your way. I don't want him to, but they probably will. This is Lynn in Chicago on The Score. Hello, Lynn. Good morning. Welcome to Hit and Run.
Good morning, Speaks. Just wanted to share that I was at the Pirates game Friday night against the Phillies.
Wow.
Awesome ballpark. The thing about that was you never felt like the Pirates were out of it. Phillies took 3-0, top of the first.
Yeah.
They came right back. And then the guy, Gonzalez, he was grounding out, but he was racing to first, and then he hits the walk-off. And with the Cubs, it's just like if they're down 3-0, it's almost like you feel like it's over. The Pirates, you never felt that it was over. The energy was electric.
Man,
that's
a great. Thank you, Lynn. And that's what it felt like last year for the Cubs for a lot of the season. Right up until September, it felt like that. They were having fun and they were good and they seemed young and had a spark and it was like it felt exciting. And that is certainly not the case. Yeah, Pirates were down 3-0 after the top of the first. And at one point, they were down 7-4, obviously, and came all the way back. Man. Must be nice. Must be nice to be young and hungry and have that feeling in a beautiful ballpark that everything is possible. 39,000 in Pittsburgh, man. I love when a fan base shows up. By the way, Greg Brown, that broadcaster, who'll be a guest coming up on the PBP in the next couple of weeks, he is the losingest broadcaster in the history of baseball. Even more than Herb Score back with Cleveland back in the day. No one has been behind the mic for more losses than Greg Brown of the Pirates. And he's a good dude. So, rooting for that guy. And Pirates fans, if it's not going to be the Cubs, let it be the Pirates. You know? Texter had said, Spiegs, I'm not ready for football season, but the Sox and Cubs are no fun. Who are some teams we can follow the rest of the way to salvage the season? Well, I just gave you one with the Pittsburgh Pirates, if you can stomach it. There are others. We'll try to get to that throughout the rest of the show. Pitching Ninja, Rob Friedman on the state of pitching around MLB. Bob Brenly in 1 hour. Bonus Hit and Run until 12:45 today with me, Matt Spiegel. Keep it here on The Score. The pursuit of nastiness.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.